Monday, June 6th is the 72nd anniversary of D-Day, the day when humans became heroes. As more and more of those World War II veterans are passing away, their actions and their legacies will one day, very soon, be confined to books. And remember that film, The Longest Day? And that's why it's so important to learn, understand, and appreciate what that day in the past meant for America's future and the world's future. When you think of the full spectrum of what happened in that day, my next guest is a military historian whose writing helps you understand America's military acts and priorities without the pollution of politics. Let's underline and boldface that. His book is America Invades, How We've Invaded or Been Military Involved with Almost Every Country on Earth. And to learn more about D-Day and elsewhere, we say good morning to Christopher Kelly. Good morning, Chris.
Good morning, Chris. Great to be with you.
AmericaInvades.com is the website for this one of Chris's books. And unlike what people might suspect from the title and the cover, because if you look at it in the subtitle, How We've Invaded or Military Involved with Almost Every Country on Earth, this is not a cheering or a downed or a downing of America in any way as some sort of imperialistic bully or any way, shape, or form. You just go country by country and reveal the history and some very interesting trivia about America's various military activities throughout the world and throughout time.
That's right. We kind of offer a world tour of American military involvement around the world, and we try to do it in a dispassionate, you know, nonpartisan, non-political way.
And non-judgmental, too, I think is the...
Exactly, to kind of lay out the facts and let the readers make up their own minds of whether they think this was a good idea or not such a great idea or a bit of both or, you know, whatever. So.
As I mentioned, Monday is the 72nd anniversary of D-Day, June 6, 1944. Overall, what was D-Day, let me use a poker analogy, was that an all-in when that you would do when you know you can win the game, or was that more a Hail Mary pass with the fear that, well, we got this one last shot to avoid everything, keep from everything from falling apart?
Well, D-Day was, you know, of course, the largest amphibious invasion in human history, and it was the cross-channel invasion, June 6, 1944, 72 years ago, and it was incredibly well planned. It was Operation Overlord by Eisenhower and his staff working in London at Grosvenor Square, and his office is there. And it was, I think it was a pretty well conceived plan. I mean, it was a response, as you know, all wars have a political dimension, and so it was a response to the political demands of an alliance to defeat the Axis. And there was great pressure from the Soviets on the West, on Britain and America, to open up a second front. To fight against the Germans and to invade. And Stalin had been pushing for D-Day to happen years before, in 42 and 43, which probably would have been premature and could have resulted in a bloody nose. But fortunately, they were able to delay and wait till 44, and they were successful at that point.
You mentioned how Christopher's book, America Invades, has fascinating trivia along with the history. And you know, when you think of the monumental event that was about to take place, everything that was relying and resting upon it, it was just three words that started everything by Eisenhower. Okay, let's go.
It was a very simple order. Yeah, okay, let's go. And to vault the channel at that point. And it actually started the night before on June 5th when you had the airborne landing. You had the 82nd Airborne and 101st that landed near Semmeringen on the western flank of the front. And then you had the British landing at Pegasus Bridge on the eastern flank of the front, in advance of the amphibious landing, which of course was the next morning. And it was a success. There was great worry about it. I mean, Eisenhower had even written a note of resignation prior to the event in case it was unsuccessful, that he was obviously concerned and incredibly nervous. He was chain smoking and was very worried. I mean, he had the responsibility of the world on his shoulders, I think, I'm sure, at the time.
Some of the names of note, too, you have on Utah Beach, the oldest son of Teddy Roosevelt.
That's right. You had at Utah Beach, which is not as quite as well known, you had one of the oldest commanders who was 56 years old at the time and the former son of Teddy Roosevelt who landed. And the landing craft didn't land at quite the correct beaches at Utah, and they were about a mile off. And he was asked whether he wanted to re-embark, and he said, "No, we'll start the war from right here." And they did. So, unfortunately, Teddy Roosevelt is actually buried at wasn't killed on D-Day, but he was killed, died shortly afterwards of a heart attack, and is buried along with, of course, many soldiers at the incredibly beautiful beaches and the incredibly beautiful cemeteries that are above the beaches at Omaha and Utah.
Christopher Kelly, his book America Invades, How We've Invaded or Been Military Involved with Almost Every Country on Earth. AmericaInvades.com is the website. Some fascinating photos as well as the history. And you're listening to Issues and Ideas. General George Patton, certainly a recognizable name. His role in and around D-Day.
Yeah, he played an important role, even though he wasn't landing on the beaches and he wasn't in command of units. He was in the command of something called FUSAG, which was the first U.S. Army group, which was a wholly fictional army group, and it was with inflatable tanks and basically a fake unit that the Germans thought that Patton would surely lead the invasion because they thought he was the best American general. And everybody was indicating that he was going to land at Pas-de-Calais with Patton. And that deception really was effective and worked because even after the invasion had started, Hitler still continued to believe that the Normandy landings were just a feint and that the real landing was going to come at Pas-de-Calais, and that delayed their response and ability to kind of counterpunch against the invasion, the beachhead for the invasion.
When you look at the magnitude, 3 million men, 11,000 planes, 4,000 ships, largest, yep, as you said, the armada the world had ever seen. Obviously, the element of surprise was faint, if any way, shape, or form possible.
It's astonishing that they managed to pull off a strategic surprise, and the fact that you had Rommel, who was supposed to be in command of the defenses of Normandy, and instead he was off at his wife's 50th birthday party in Germany at the time. So he was clearly fooled. Hitler was fooled, and they did have this delayed response. Plus, they'd also American air power really devastated the French railways, making it difficult for the Germans to counterattack as well.
What ifs are always challenging, but with your appreciation and your knowledge of history and dedication to it, what if D-Day failed? What would have been Plan B?
Well, I think at that point in 1944, Germany had been destroyed in terms of from the air. I mean, a lot of the industrial cities had been laid waste by Allied air power, and the German and the East and the Soviets were coming in from the east. So I'm not sure if even if D-Day had failed, that the Germans would have won the war. I don't think they would have. But what certainly would have been the case is that in the Cold War, you would have had the Soviets being in liberating Paris, and so you wouldn't have had Western Europe in Western hands. And it would have had enormous consequences for what followed after the war, I believe. And so because D-Day was a success, France was liberated, and, of course, the concentration camps were liberated, West Germany and Europe, Western Europe had a very different fate because of it.
Wrapping up our time with Christopher Kelly with his book, America Invades, How We've Invaded or Been Military Involved with Almost Every Country on Earth. AmericaInvades.com is the website, and you're listening to Issues and Ideas. As I mentioned, too, it's one of those books you can open up to any section and learn something. And it seems like, well, one interesting bit of trivia is that America had military action before it was officially America.
That's right. We cover a lot of ground in geography. We go through every country on Earth from Afghanistan to Zimbabwe. And we found that the very first American military involvement took place in what is today Colombia, back all the way back to 1741. And you say, well, how can that be when there was no United States of America, which is true. But there was a war going on. It was the War of Jenkins Ear between the Spanish and the British. And there was an Admiral Edmund Vernon of the Royal Navy who led this expedition that was invading what is today Colombia. And it had about 3,500 American colonial troops, one of whom was Lawrence Washington, who was the older half-brother of George. And the expedition wasn't really successful. They didn't take Cartagena, and there were a lot of casualties due to disease. But nevertheless, Lawrence must have formed a high opinion of his commanding officer because he named his home in his honor and called it Mount Vernon. And when Lawrence died, he bequeathed it to his brother George, and so there's a direct connection between George Washington, our president's first our president's home, and the very first American invasion.
All through the book, America Invades, how we've invaded or have been military involved with almost every country on earth. Every page you turn to, you're going to find something you've never imagined that was possible, you never knew could have been. You'll learn things like how long it took before the U.S. recognized officially Israel after a reform as a state. You'll find out the centuries of military activity in South America. When you read the sections about the Middle East and you look at events today, you'll start to think, well, can what was in the past of South America be a guidepost for what may still have to happen in the Middle East? And there's a whole variety of paths that your mind and your imagination and your sense of history will take as you either read cover to cover or just bounce around at your preference through America Invades, how we've invaded or been military involved with almost every country on earth. Learn more about it. Get your copy through AmericaInvades.com. Christopher Kelly, what you do with history and paying honor to centuries of heroics through our U.S. military is you giving them the proper respect. And as I said in the introduction, you don't pollute it with politics. So thank you for doing that, for being here this morning.
Thanks very much. We appreciate it. You can learn more at AmericaInvades.com, and 5% of all proceeds go to military charities as well.